Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to this week's Brave New World programme. My name's John Harrison. We've come a long way since the end of the last millennium when Japanese teenagers started using a few cheeky graphic symbols on their pages. Now these symbols have become emoji and there are over 800 of them. New ones have been added, and the way that they're added is that a would-be new symbol has to be shown that it is filling an existing gap in communication. We tend to use these graphic symbols when words fail us or as a shortcut. Interestingly, people all over the world seem to be using the same kind of symbols. Now, this opens the door for the creation of a new universal visual language and also to all sorts of questions that I would like to ask our guest, Dr. Neil Cohn, who is Assistant Professor at the Tilburg Centre for Cognition and Communication in Tilburg University in the Netherlands. Thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Cohn.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you, please, could this be the start of something a lot bigger than the original inventors of emojis imagined when they were simply adding cute footnotes at the end of their messages?
Well, I think that it might already be bigger than they intended, in that people are using it with a great deal of proficiency and frequency. Whether the emoji can become something more complicated, though, I think is unlikely.
Right.
For example, I don't think emoji can become a language on their own, given that they lack a lot of features that languages have on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that emoji lack a lot of communicative potential that is broader. And they also will probably not become a universal system of communication.
Now, I'd like to challenge you because, I mean, I can now communicate with my friends in China, and I studied there for a long time, but I've completely forgotten Chinese. So when they write to me in Chinese, I can't understand what on earth they're talking about. But from time to time, they send me messages using emoji, and even though I don't understand perhaps as much as they would if they were writing to me properly, I do get a message. I do get something through, and I can respond to them. Is that not communication in itself?
Well, certainly it is communication.
Yeah.
So most definitely emoji have the ability to communicate meaning to each other in a very good communicative fashion, just like we would communicate through speech or through gestures or through other sorts of drawings.
Mm-hmm.
But just being communicative does not necessarily mean that something is a full language. In order to be a full language, you need to have both the channel that's being expressed. So in this case, I'm using my verbal channel, my mouth, I'm creating sounds.
Mm-hmm.
In emoji, they use graphics, and they express meaning. Languages also express meaning the same way that words have meanings for them, and gestures have meanings, and emoji have meanings. But language also uses a grammar. So that is a system that governs the way sequences are made.
Yep.
And that grammar governs the sequences such that some sequences end up being good. Those are the ones that are produced. And it limits the amount of sequences that would be incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
Or gives a system of constraints such that you don't produce ungrammatical sequences in speech. And because of that, emoji don't actually have this type of grammar, or at least it doesn't seem to be the case, such that you can create complex, long sequences that are constrained in such a way that it is easy to understand them. So emoji essentially lack the final ingredient, which is grammar.
Right. I suppose, ancient pictographic, ideographic languages like Aztec or Mixtec, I suppose they worked because I think Aztec, there was a phonetic element, wasn't there, involved in it. It wasn't just pictographs, but also those languages worked within a smallish community, in modern terms at least, and therefore perhaps there was a lot of meaning which was attributed.
Right. So, that's exactly right. So, say like Egyptian hieroglyphics or Mixtec or Aztec systems of pictographs, they weren't actually pictographic. They were actually writing systems in the same way that writing systems today map sounds to graphics. They also map sounds to graphics, even though they might have more pictorial qualities to them. In combination with that, though, they would have purely visual information. So in the same way that today's comic books have pictures combined with text, Egyptian hieroglyphics would be combined with images also. So you do have a complete pictographic form, but the hieroglyphics are a writing system that is tied to verbal language. So they on their own would not convey information the way we think of emoji working, where emoji don't necessarily have any sort of sound values to them.
Right. But could they have a sound value? I mean, could you actually add, you know, weird noises to emoji, and we'd sort of recognize them by the sound as well as by the, or in place of the visual aspects?
Well, we do have that for some of them.
Mm-hmm.
If we did that with emoji, they would simply become another type of writing system, and they would lose their meaning as graphic communicative signs.
Mm-hmm.
And some do have this. For example, if we think about the heart shape, the heart has a phonological pronunciation. We look at it and we say, oh, heart, that's the name. But in context, we might pronounce it as love. So I heart, yeah, you know, New York is pronounced I love New York.
Right.
Or if you're being cheeky, I heart New York. So there is a pronunciation to it. But we don't pronounce every single emoji that way. They don't all have that sort of mapping to a phonology per se or pronunciation. And if they did, they would simply become a writing system.
Right. I find it fascinating because of globalization and the use of the World Wide Web, and that these symbols have indeed become truly international. They don't belong to one country, although they may be mostly thought of in one or a group of small countries or large countries, I don't know. But they have become international symbols, and therefore they break barriers, they dissolve barriers which are there with languages as we commonly know them. Surely this is an interesting phenomenon.
Yes. Well, the fact that we have an increasingly global world means that we have increasingly global ways of communicating with each other. Emoji actually originate in what I would call the Japanese visual language, which is the visual language that is used by manga. Yet they combine the elements of Japanese visual language with the smiley faces,
mm-hmm,
which are not typically Japanese. Smiley faces are typically from American representations. So it's kind of a merger of two visual languages already.
Right.
In emoji.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
From the beginning. Yet now the usage means that it transcends global boundaries because people are using them all over the world. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that people are using them all over the world in the same ways. So people might be using the same emoji but intending different meanings from them based on whatever cultural context they come from.
Yes, that's fascinating. Let's take a short break here. Welcome back to Brave New World Program. Today we're talking about the power of emojis and their limitations as well. I'm discussing this subject with Dr. Neil Cohn, who is Assistant Professor at the Tilburg Center for Cognition and Communication in Tilburg University in the Netherlands. Now, we've had a very interesting discussion so far on this program about perhaps the limitations of emoji for those of us, including myself, who perhaps imagined that emoji could become a new Esperanto that seems to be happening in the sort of high-tech 21st century. But alas, that doesn't seem to be the case. Emoji is not going to become a fully-fledged language. But nevertheless, as a phenomenon that's interesting, and as language has always been considered to be part of culture, perhaps one of the major aspects of culture, Dr. Cohn, can the advent of emoji somehow affect our cultures?
Well, that's certainly an interesting question in terms of affecting culture. I don't know. Certainly they affect the way in which people are communicating actively. I don't know if they could fully affect culture insofar as that, like, it changes the way that culture functions,
mm-hmm,
on the whole. Certainly they fit into the way people communicate and have changed the way people communicate, which means that they are already changing the way culture works simply because people are communicating a little bit differently than they did before. But not in a fully, unnatural way that has never been done before in human languages or human communication. Certainly people have always communicated with both images and text together, just like we also communicate with speech and gestures together. This is part of our kind of natural human communication systems, is to combine modalities together. It's just that with technology, we are now using increasingly textual communication, and emoji then are filling in a gap for being able to communicate more richly through text by also adding these small images to them.
Yeah.
Where it would be much more challenging, for example, for me to draw to each other somebody else while I'm talking.
Right. If emoji sort of carries on and more and more, I think particularly young people, you know, my daughter, you know, she lives in that world. I unfortunately don't, or fortunately, I don't know. But, I mean, does it affect the way that we use the written language? Has it become less necessary to really be fluent when you can basically staccato write a few words in broken English and then, you know, sprinkle in a few emoji and get your message across? Why bother to get an A-level or whatever in English or Japanese or Chinese?
Well, certainly you can add emoji to whatever level of writing you use. So I use emoji quite a lot when I text people, but I also write in full coherent sentences. So the addition of emoji or the use of emoji in combination with what you write, but it is somewhat independent of how you use the actual writing itself. And of course, there's different contexts for types of writing. So no matter how sparse I might text to my friends, it doesn't mean I'm going to write an academic paper in that sort of language.
Okay, I've got a question, and please don't take it personally.
Sure.
I feel that you're a very educated person, and you've obviously attained a lot of incredible academic qualifications in your life. Perhaps you're a little bit out of touch with young people, you know, like the cool generation, who use emoji a lot more than me and you do, because that's where they're coming from. And what I'm trying to get at is that instead of going to school and learning and reading books in the way that we read books or read books in the past when they were books and not Kindle readers or whatever, a generational change is happening, and people are using emoji in a way to replace traditional language. At least that's the impression I get, but you're telling me I'm wrong.
Well, I think that it's not that emoji are going to be replacing our use of written language. They are enhancing and adding to. But again, I think it depends on the register that you use. So certainly in the case of text-based communication, when people are, say, writing back and forth to each other or emailing or things like that, it may indeed be more sparse.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, like, you know, terse and replacing more things for images. But again, that's a particular context in which society functions, and the way in which our society is built means that that's not appropriate for some contexts. In the same way that I would not necessarily talk to my friends in the same way that I would give a lecture. It's just a different register in the way that I'm using language.
Yep.
So I think that if young people who are using the much more terse, casual texting communication, that's fine for that context. But if they were then to bring it to a different context, we would probably collectively say, well, that's certainly not appropriate for that context.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily apply just to emoji. That applies to all of communication, right?
Yeah.
So again, like, you wouldn't write an academic paper the way that, like, I hang out with my friends, you know, in a pub or something like that.
One very quick last question. I'm a little bit concerned by the fact that to register an emoji, because you have to register, because they're going out all over the world, on the World Wide Web, and if they're not registered, there's going to be clashes of symbols which say the same things and so on. So they have to be registered, essentially, don't they, in this thing called the Unicode Consortium, whose 10 full members include Google, Apple, Microsoft, and Yahoo. And as soon as somebody mentions the names of these organizations to me, I immediately think, multinational control. Now, is there a danger that the development of these sort of symbols will lead to a control of this new form of communication by a group of corporations in a country or a group of countries?
Well, certainly that is a concern for what the vocabulary consists of. If one group is deciding what things people can use, then it is certainly going to be limited by a multinational corporations. At the same time, no matter what, if there is a group deciding which ones can be used, it's going to limit the language from being able to become an actual language.
Yeah.
And because language is developed by how people use them, and if people are not able to be determining which emoji there are by their usage, it's simply not going to develop in a rich way.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be always going to be limited by what these groups think that people want, rather than what people actually want or would use.
Okay, at the end of the text, this program, I should put a lovely big emoji with a happy face and a quizzical expression above it.
That sounds perfect.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Neil Cohn, Assistant Professor at the Tilburg Centre for Cognition and Communication at Tilburg University in Netherlands. And thank you very much, listeners. Tune in again next week. Goodbye. Thank you.